And yeah, go ahead.
All right. Well, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to this special bargaining session on March 15th, 2023, between the United Faculty of Florida chapter at the University of Central Florida and the UCF Board of Trustees bargaining team. I want to thank everybody for being present today. We know because this is our spring break week, it may be difficult for some people to join us, but we appreciate the chance to talk to you a little bit about what is going on. And what I'd like to do, especially since we don't have many members from the UFF bargaining team with us this afternoon, I'd like to talk a little bit about what we're proposing. And then there's actually a draft MOU that we prepared just as something that we could share with you. And I think what we'll do is, we'll go through this, share it with you, and maybe that'll be enough for today. And it'll give you an opportunity to talk about what we've proposed with the rest of your team. So,
yeah, I think Chuck, that would be really good. I'm sorry I had to, turn off my the camera, but I think that would be good because when we agreed, we did not get feedback from our members. So it seems like people are away on spring break. So this will be more an information session and then okay. We can go from there. So Robert has a question.
Yeah, Chuck, do we have to approve the minutes from the last session?
Charlie says no.
Well, first off, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
First off, I didn't do them. But secondly, I guess we signed and we were done. I guess I could do that at the beginning of the next bargaining.
I don't know. I'm trying to make sure Chuck keeps his job and doesn't get fired for 9 minutes top of this meeting.
Appreciate you looking out for me, Robert.
That was the first time I recorded and I didn't write down who was there. I don't think, I have a Carrie. Hi, Carrie. I don't know what your last name is. But anyway, I'm supposed to write down the names and I didn't do that at our last session. So the minutes are going to be inferior this last time. My apologies.
No, that would be even better. I think that would be better because that way, that will be the next official meeting. This one we will get. So that's good. But it's good that Robert is looking out for everyone.
Yeah, I'm very grateful for that. Well, thank you again for being here. What we wanted to do today is talk to you about the university's intention to implement two new academic terms beginning in the next academic year. So in the 2023-2024 academic year, there are two new terms that we're intending to use. The first is called the winter intersession. And I'm gonna try to share my screen just for a minute. I can't share the screen, Charlie. I'm still being told. Ah, okay. Here we go. So I'd like to just give you some idea of what the winter intersession might look like, what we intend to do in December. On the Monday after fall semester graduation, we would begin the winter intersession. These courses would run for 3 weeks and end on January 5th. Classes would begin on January 8th for the spring semester. In addition to the winter intersession, next May, we would like to use something called the Maymester, and that would begin again the Monday after graduation for the spring. These classes would go for four weeks and end on May 31st in 2024. We're also proposing to do the same thing in 24-25. It would start, the winter intersession would start on December 16th of 2024, end on January 3rd of 2025. And then the Maymester would be from May 5th through May 30th of 2025. So those are what's proposed. For both of these sessions, enrollment by students would be voluntary. And I want to emphasize that participation by employees in both the winter intersession and the Maymester would be completely voluntary. There would be no one would be required to teach in either of those terms. And I want to explain a little bit why we're proposing this. The university is putting a lot of emphasis on student success. There's a lot of advantages to all of us to be gained if we can increase our graduation rates, decrease the time to degree, and decrease the debt burden that students have upon their graduation from UCF. This emphasis on student success is consistent with what the Board of Governors has done with its performance funding. I can remind you that some of the metrics that are used for performance funding for UCF include number 4 is the 4-year graduation rate for full-time, first-time in college students. 9A is the 2-year graduation rate for AA transfers from a Florida college system. So people that are coming from Valencia and Seminole State, for example. And also 9B, the 6-year graduation rate for students who have a Pell Grant when they're at UCF. In addition, if we look at the metrics for preeminence and how we're stacking up on that, what's shown here as metric D, the 4-year graduation rate for full-time, first-time in college students, we're missing the mark right now. We're at 50%. We need to get to 60% in order to be preeminent. There are other metrics.
Just a second, Chuck. Could you say, so these numbers that are in gold, that's the national average?
No, those are the Board of Governors standard for reaching preeminence. Oh. And I believe we have to reach 11 of the 12 metrics. Right now, we're at 8 of 12.
I see. So 4-year graduation rate is one of the ones. And I see research expenditure.
Yeah, the others don't really matter with what we're talking about today, but the 4-year mm-hmm. graduation.
I get you.
Certainly does.
You will be giving us these, right? Because this is
absolutely. We'll get these to you. Mm-hmm. And you know, if we look at our new strategic plan, Unleashing Potential, student success and well-being is our top priority, the mm-hmm. number one of 4 priorities there. Some of the leaders at the university have been at other institutions before where similar terms have been used, and they've been used with success. For example, at University of South Florida, they have both a winter session and a Maymester. I spoke to my counterpart there yesterday, and he said they've been there over a decade and been quite successful. So we're hoping to duplicate some of the success that other institutions have had and see some of our students graduate sooner and with less debt. So how would we do this? With the winter intercession courses, the modality for the courses would be asynchronous online. So courses would start after graduation for the fall, and they would continue over the holiday break into the first few days of January. The modality would be asynchronous online. Instructional faculty would be offered an opportunity to perhaps teach a course in this format. It would be offered as an overload assignment, and I'll talk more about what that might look like. Compensation for 9-month employees would be similar to what they get in the summer right now with a supplemental contract. And for the winter intercession, 12-month faculty who would normally not be coming to campus for the last several years, we've had about 2 weeks where the university's actually been closed. These classes would be going on, even if we happen to be closed, the president's made no announcement about the next holiday season. But the 12-month employees who would otherwise perhaps be at home for a couple of weeks would receive an overload appointment for the winter intercession.
Chuck, maybe if I could just get a little bit of clarification on that, because I think that's important. So what you're saying is that the winter intercession, because the 9-month faculty and 12-month, they're both employed at that time, right? It's not like the summer where you get a separate contract. So this will be considered an overload. And then the compensation, so let's say you taught this one course, which is for 3 weeks, your compensation will be the same as what you would get in the summer?
Yes, okay. For the 9 month.
Yeah, and for the 12 month?
Well, I'll show you in a moment. Okay. There will be compensation because it's an overload, but right now, 12-month employees just get their regular check in the summer.
Okay.
Because it's not an overload.
Okay.
But those are good questions, Talat. For the Maymester courses, the Maymester is going to turn out to effectively be another summer term. It's going to start just a couple of days earlier than the Summer A and Summer C courses and Summer D. There will be a supplemental summer contract for 9-month employees only for Maymester courses. And we're expecting that the modality will be mostly asynchronous online as well. But because the university's not shut down, there is the potential that courses could even be offered in other modalities, including face-to-face. So as I mentioned, we have drafted an MOU that I'll share with you, and I'll display it on the screen so you can see it. And Talat will certainly, when we're done or when we take a break or whatever, we'll make sure that we send this to you so that you have it and that you can share it with your members and your team.
Great. I do, you know, I'm sure you've done the research on this. So the main reason that you're giving is that this will help students graduate, those who are not able to do that because they have a course or two that they are not able to take. I was wondering, these will probably then, since they're asynchronous and online, they would probably not be the lab courses?
That's right. Not every course is going to be amenable to the winter intercession format, because that is strictly asynchronous online. The university may be closed for a portion of that time. So labs wouldn't even be available.
Right.
If we wanted. So you're right that not every course is going to fit real well with the winter intercession. There may be some additional courses that fit well with the Maymester, but you know, things with a very heavy lab component, I think are going to be tough to do just because of the compressed time anything else.
Sorry. So in the summer then, we have the summer sessions already. The only difference here would be that this will be more condensed.
More condensed, yes.
Okay. And the compensation for the faculty member is the same regardless of whether they are doing the regular summer or this one.
Correct. And you'll see that in a moment. I'm about to put up the draft MOU that we have.
I think we have a question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. KV, go, yeah.
Oh, first of all, I want to apologize for my parents. I'm on spring break and I'm packing up a house. So excuse my hair rollers. But my question is, and maybe you will cover this in the presentation. When I taught at UMBC in Maryland and also UMass Boston, I've always taught, we called it winter session. So I've always taught that December, early January ending, whatever, winter session. And at UMBC, there was always a May session. And then there were two or three others during the summer. At UMass Boston, you had just a regular, I think there were three sessions during the summer. Now, the reason why I did it personally, and I have been pretty much teaching during winter session and the early session during the summer, was for two reasons. One was selfish, because it was money that went to IRS. But the second reason was, I guess, being selfless, because at both UMBC and at UMass Boston, there was this incentive that also went along with teaching during the winter session and the winter intercession, as you're calling it, as well as Maymester or the summer sessions. And because these courses were drawing in extra money for the university, particularly UMBC, as well as particularly UMass Boston is similar to UCF with having a large, diverse international community, many of those students leaving during the holidays and summer, but they still want to take courses during these special sessions. The school made a lot of money, but what worked for us was that we had gotten a percentage of that money. And for example, in Africana studies at UMBC or at UMass Boston, if we had 10 faculty members and 7 of them opted to use their break to teach, whatever those courses, whatever monies those courses generated, we were given a percentage of that that went into a little, I guess, what you call it, a kiddie pot, where we can use that money as extra money as we please, you know, whether it's co-sponsoring or buying something or whatever, okay? So my question is, in terms of this proposal of these special sessions, what is in it for the departments? Because if the university is getting richer and richer from our labor, then, you know, besides me personally getting benefited, I was just thinking it would be kind of nice if the departments themselves had gotten a small percentage of the monies earned. Okay, I'm putting back on my photo where I'm cuter.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you for the question.
Welcome.
And I appreciate the suggestion to, you know, look at some of these other institutions. I hadn't known about UMBC and UMass Boston being involved in these things. We'll certainly take a look at those.
Chuck, could I interrupt you for a moment? We're all looking at your emails right now because you're sharing your screen. So I thought you might want to revert to, there we go. Thank you. Sorry to interrupt.
Well, at least you could have done is answered some of those emails, so I didn't have to worry about it, but... thank you. We had not talked about, you know, what departments might do, and I think this is really a departmental decision. If a department is participating in this and recognizes that there's some benefit, if they want to reward faculty who participate by providing some additional travel funds, additional funds to purchase books, to me that's a local call. That isn't necessarily something that we can put in an agreement at the university level. We don't know that everybody's going to participate. We don't know that every department is going to end up making lots of money. I hope you're right. I hope this is what happens, that this is successful. This isn't about making money necessarily. The primary motivation is really to see our students succeed in a more timely way. At the same time, we think as an institution, we can benefit. There may be some additional revenue, that's correct, that's possible. But we also think that if we are successful in accelerating students toward graduation, if students are graduating with less debt, for example, that may improve us, our standing in the BOG metrics for performance funding and for preeminence. And if we get preeminence, then there's something, there'll be additional funding, so Chuck, at least to the institution.
What I was wondering was whether, you know, I mean, we'll of course take a look at all of this, but what I was also wondering was whether we would be doing this as a pilot program and revisit so that all these questions, you know, would come up. And I know you're doing an MOU, so that may imply that anyway.
Well, let me show you what what we've got. And I'm gonna try again to not show you my email, and we'll see how successful.
Don't show us your letters either.
Is that better?
Yeah, we can see
it. Okay. All right. Well, I don't want to read this in its entirety, but you know, we want to recognize, first of all, that the United Faculty of Florida is a certified bargaining agent for a unit of employees at UCF. We concluded our collective bargaining for 2022-2024 very recently. We did that in January. We recognize that we'll be opening full book negotiations for 2024 through 2027 in November, several months from now, but we don't know when those will be concluded. So we thought, well, maybe there's something like an MOU that can carry us through until, just as you suggested, Talat, at some point we'll have to talk about these things again, but we don't know when that might be finalized. It's a little bit hard to predict. We mentioned here that we intend to offer courses in these accelerated terms in the upcoming academic year, 23-24. The classes in the winter intersession expected to begin the Monday after graduation in the fall and the Friday before classes start in spring. For the May semester, classes would begin the Monday after graduation for the spring and to last for 4 weeks. We think we share an interest in supporting efforts to increase student success and shorten their time to degree. The university is committed to fairly compensating and evaluating its instructional faculty. We're suggesting that we would agree to supplement the current CBA with the following terms until we complete negotiations on a new CBA at some point in the future, and that new CBA is fully ratified. So I hope that gets at what you were mentioning a lot, that we do have additional negotiations that will take place. Mm-hmm. They will be coming up. And this is what we see as something that can be used up until that point. Hopefully, you know, whatever we agree on is successful, and we either continue it or modify it based on the experiences that we have.
So, you know, some of the concern is, of course, that pedagogically, this is not the ideal way to go, right? If you're concentrating things in 3 weeks or 4 weeks. And then the question would be that how does this impact our regular courses that we teach and those that we offer in the summer? So those will be some, like this should not be a substitute for those. I can see that we do have a backlog of students who have not graduated, and providing them means so that they can graduate in a timely manner makes sense. But at the same time, we need to be sure that the regular teaching schedule that we have, and summer included, that those are maintained, and we don't, you know, allow people a cheap way out.
Right? Yeah. Now, I think that's a good point. And what I expect is going to happen is, at least in the short term, these would be additional courses in addition to the courses that we normally offer in this mm-hmm. fall and in spring, and perhaps in the summer as well. If it turns out that we achieve the same type of success that USF has had, that UMBC has had, that UMass Boston has had, it's possible that units would start to plan a little bit differently. And instead of offering 10 sections of some course, I'll just pick on Robert right now and say maybe it's a history course. We offer 10 sections of American history in the fall. Maybe we'll offer 9 and offer 1 in the winter intersession. That could happen at some point. But I don't see a change like that taking place until we know that this is meeting the students' needs. And we're beginning to accomplish what we want to accomplish with regard to student success. So no, the intention is not to reduce offerings in the fall and in the spring. At some point, there may be a new balance of offerings that we'll want to achieve based on the response that we see from students and faculty to these new academic terms.
Yeah, and you know, one of the questions that I also have is that if our goal, and I hope our goal continues to be a preeminent research university, then in that case, we do want to give our colleagues the opportunity to engage in research, right? And again, we have had these issues of faculty to student ratio and so on. So if we think of about all of this in a holistic way, and if it is in the long run going to enhance the opportunity for people to be creative during the academic year, you know, and more be engaged more in scholarly activities, then that may be a different question, right? But we have to see it so that it affects students and faculty in a positive way, right? And while having the overarching goal of becoming a leading university, I just don't want it to be a vehicle by which we are able to hand out degrees, but rather a vehicle by which we are able to make our university more excellent than what it is right now. I think if that's the goal, then we should be talking about it in those terms, right?
And that is the goal. Yeah. That is the goal. As it says here, for the winter intercession, the appointments would be overload appointments. They'd be offered equitably and as appropriate to qualified employees in sufficient time that allows them to voluntarily accept or reject the offer to teach. The overload duties are definitely not in load. So, you know, I think this addresses your question about, are we just moving things from the fall into the winter intercession? No, these are not the load, the teaching assignment, the regular teaching assignment the faculty have would remain the same. This is an additional course, particularly in the winter intercession. Mm-hmm. And this year we have the asynchronous online modality. The offerings of courses and the appointments would take into account the programmatic needs, student demand. We've added the suitability of the asynchronous online modality and budget availability, taking language that's already in the CBA, with the exception of the suitability of the asynchronous online modality. For the Maymester, we say we're going to have supplemental summer appointments for the Maymester. They too would be offered equitably and as appropriate to qualified employees, not later than 5 weeks prior to the beginning of the course. We'll take into account programmatic needs, student demand, and classroom and budget availability, the same things that we have right now in the CBA with the summer assignments. So the overload and summer supplemental teaching assignments, like those for the fall and the spring, will include normal activities that a department or unit would include in the assignment, office hours, course preparation, curriculum development, lectures, evaluation of student efforts, academic advising, research, department, college, and university committee meetings. Although I suspect, particularly during the winter intersession, there will not be many department, college, or university committee meetings. Thank you.
Chuck, this thing about courses that you're talking about, is there going to be a limit to the number of students that are enrolled? Or because the one question that came up is that who will be paying for GTAs? And so, you know, if they're small classes, then of course one need not have GTAs, but if they are large enrollment classes, then where are the GTAs going to come from? That's going to be a whole different story.
Well, so I hope at some point we have the problem where we need to find TAs for these courses, because we got people wanting to teach them, we got students that want to take them. I don't have a better answer than say that the department that's offering the course would provide the support
the instructor. So the funding will come from a separate base, right? I mean, it's not going to come from the same pot of money that funds regular courses.
I don't know that there's a separate pot of money, but I will look into that.
Right, because see, the GTA appointment is going to be actually quite interesting as to how that is worked in.
I suspect it would be a different pot of money because it's similarly funded to summer and it's also optional like summer. So because that's where the interplay is, I think so.
So
yeah. I'll look into that.
It probably will be because summer is a totally separate chunk of money, right? And so this probably would be that way. One question, we would, of course, you know, after we have received information from you, we would do a quick survey of our bargaining unit members. But the question that came in the chat was that, has the university surveyed students that whether they would be interested in these courses?
I'll find that out as well. There was a university committee that looked at that. Dr. Berry headed that up. I will find out about surveys of students.
Uh-huh, okay, that would be good because that would be the other thing, right? How would are students really interested? And the source of money is important because that will determine how it will be dealt with, right?
All right, we'll get answers to those questions.
Yeah. You already mentioned that, you know, it will be voluntary and it will be up to the individual, but the same thing would be for the departments too, right? Because departments may or may not want to participate.
Well, as it says, you know, it depends on budget.
Yeah.
It depends on budget availability. So a department wouldn't have to do this, just as a faculty member wouldn't have to do it. Students don't have to enroll in the classes.
There's one more message in chat that just came. This is something about, okay, a 3-credit course would have approximately 45 hours of instruction during the semester. Will these 3 to 4 week courses have the same number of instruction hours?
These will be taught asynchronous online. So in that modality, there needs to be the equivalent instruction of, say, 45 hours in face-to-face classes.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people who have already developed online courses and are familiar with, you know, what would be required. I could imagine that there would be courses that have already been offered in an asynchronous online format that would be the best candidates for these as we get going with these new terms. There may be additional courses that have not yet been offered in that type of format where someone would want to develop the online materials and then use that later on. This is not the time to experiment. You know, I've taught a particular course multiple times. I feel like doing something over the break between the fall and the spring semesters. So I'm gonna try to teach this course online. I don't think that would be a good strategy at all. Someone's gonna have to be very well prepared and will know what is required in order to teach a 3-credit hour course online. I've never taught a course fully online. I would need a lot of help getting ready for that. But I think there's many people here that are much more able than I am to offer those courses in this format.
So that does bring up this question that would this help be provided?
Well, the help would be available during the fall leading up to this time. There's a distinct possibility there would not be a lot of support available during the course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depending upon what the university does with that break. But Todd, I think you would probably agree with me that if someone's gonna teach a course online over a 3-week period, that's gotta be ready to go before that class starts.
Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah, you know, something that probably will come up in our discussions, and it has already come up, that the summer courses that are offered in some departments, and this is not, I wasn't aware of it until I started working in this capacity here, that in some departments, faculty are not appropriately compensated for their summer summer courses, and there's some arm twisting that goes on and so forth. And I think you're very aware of that. So the question here would be the same thing, that, you know, we want colleagues to be appropriately compensated, and we don't want to run into the same problems that they are in some of the courses. So some of the summer courses. I'm talking about study abroad in particular.
Well, study abroad is covered separately by a separate section in the CBA. We're not talking about study abroad courses right now. When Article 8 reopens, you know, I think we will again propose something a little bit different for study abroad, as we did during the last session. We just didn't come to terms on any changes.
So, Chuck, it would be really nice. So another question that came in, that you know, these are usually online courses are usually GEP courses, and these courses always need GTAs. So that would be very interesting to, you know, for us to know exactly what will there be, because the GTAs are already assigned. If it is the winter, if it is the summer, that's not a problem, right? Because those could be separate GTAs. But if it's in the winter, then GTAs are already assigned. So where would the new GTAs be coming from?
Well, I expect that there would be an extra appointment for.
So it could be
a GTA. We'll find out exactly how that's going to work. I really am excited about the optimism I'm hearing that we're going to have these large enrollments in these classes, and we're going to need the TAs.
Well, if this could be additional opportunities for the GTAs to be making some.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Then that also should be looked into, because that is one of our major concerns right now, is the salaries of the GTAs. And that's really, that has to be attended to, because it's making it impossible for them to continue. Yeah.
All right. Well, we will look at that question of GTAs.
Right.
Appreciate you bringing it up. All right. I'm going to put this screen back up again.
There's one more question in here that frequently the roadblock for a student to finish in time is that a student can't take a required fundamental course and as a result can't proceed. Are these appropriate courses to have in 3 to 4 week session? If not, then how will this help students finish in a timely manner?
Well, we are not going to suggest for a moment that offering courses in these terms is going to accelerate every student's graduation. There may be some students that would benefit from an extra offering of some course. Not every course is amenable to this particular format, but we think that there are some that are amenable to it. Some are offered, asynchronous online in the summer A already. Well, if it can be offered in 6 weeks, can it be offered in 3? And I think the faculty and the departments have to make that call. But there are some courses, perhaps very technical courses, Talat, you already mentioned courses with labs, that are just not going to work in this format. But there may be some that will work, and it may help somebody graduate. One thing that occurred to me is, courses like the composition courses, I don't think will work because of the number of writing assignments that are required for the Gordon rule. I don't think it'll be possible to provide students that many opportunities to write things and give them feedback and opportunities to revise those written documents. So not every course will work, but there may be some. We think there are some that will work, and particularly with the right instructors who've been well trained to offer these courses in the asynchronous online modality.
Great. Yeah, okay, I think.
All right, well, I'm gonna continue, okay?
Yeah, go ahead. You got more to say, Chuck, that's great.
I do, I have a little bit more.
Okay.
All right, employees who are compensated for teaching a course either in the winter intersession or in the May semester will report those teaching activities on their next annual report. People who are teaching in the winter intersession will report it in the same academic year when they turn in their report on May 7th. People who teach in the May semester will report on those in the following academic year when they submit the report on the next May 7th. And those teaching activities will be considered when supervisor does the annual the appropriate annual evaluation. I want to talk a little bit about compensation. In the winter intersession, as was already mentioned, employees are already under contract. And I'm thinking primarily of 9-month employees from August 8th to May 6th or May 7th, depending upon what year it is.
So
actually, they're already under contract during the time that.
May I just ask you something here? This thing, Sarah did bring this up about what's already in collective bargaining. So summer teaching, is that in the annual evaluation? Because in some places.
Yes.
Okay. Because not everybody, you know, that is an additional assignment. That's not a regular appointment.
But it is evaluated if someone teaches in the summer.
Okay, let's proceed. Yeah, okay, thanks.
Okay, so this is how we're proposing to compensate employees who teach in the winter intersession. For employees on a 9-month contract, their overload compensation will be 12.5% of their 9-month base salary, exactly like we do right now in the summer for a 3-credit-hour course. And exactly like we do in the summer, compensation for courses that are greater or fewer than 3 credit hours would be prorated. I can't imagine that there'd be many 5-hour courses that would be offered in this compressed format, but perhaps there'd be a 4-credit-hour course, but we would prorate that 12.5%. For employees on a 12-month contract, their overload compensation would be 9%. And this is 1/11th. For the faculty on the 9-month contract, the overload is 1/8, figuring that looking at the 12 contact hour rule in the fall and the spring, a 3-credit-hour course would be 1/8 of their academic year, and get to 12.5%. For employees on a 12-month contract, thinking that teaching assignments might look like 4-4-3 over the fall, summer, and spring, they would be compensated for the winter intersession at 1/11th of their annual base salary. And again, that compensation would be prorated if the course is greater or fewer than 3 credit hours. For the May semester, 9-month employees who agree to teach it one course. There will only be, no one's going to teach 2 courses in the May semester. No one's going to teach 2 courses in the winter intersession. There will only be 1 at a time. They would be compensated for, like the 9-month employees who teach in the summer, they get 12.5% of their 9-month base salary for a 3-credit-hour course. We prorate things for greater or fewer than 3 credit hours. For 12-month employees who normally teach in the summer anyway, there's no change here. They would just get their regular compensation. And the last thing we have is we don't know exactly what this is going to look like yet, how quickly this is going to catch on at UCF. At this point, the employee and contingent tuition waivers would not be available during the winter intersession and the May semester. They'd still be available in the fall, the spring, and the regular summer sessions, but not during these special terms. So that's it. That's what we are proposing for your consideration. Talat, we'll make sure that we get you this document.
Okay, yeah, please do, because then we can share it. We'll also have a questionnaire that we'll send out to the folks in the bargaining unit and get their feedback. So that'd be interesting. Yeah. So let's see. Let's see what we can do.
Galat, do you have any additional questions?
Actually, I think you've covered most of them. I think, yes, I had a whole list of questions, but seems like all of them have been covered. Let me just ask, since one colleague has raised his hand.
Oh.
The Honorable Robert Casanello.
Charlie, I just want to know, is the MOU up on the webpage yet?
No, not yet.
No, nothing.
All right. Can you let me know when it appears on the webpage?
Sure. And the three other handouts that he showed, I guess, or links. Sure.
Yeah, that'd be helpful. Thank you.
And when you send it to us, we will post it too. And now, for all the colleagues who made the time to attend this session, please feel free. If you have any questions, this would be a good time to ask. Right, Chuck? We
could certainly.
Yeah. So if anybody has any questions or suggestions, this is a good time. Already you made some very important suggestions and we've noted them. But also you spread the word, and if there are any additional questions and something that we can make it better, do email me or Robert and we will take it from there.
A new laptop for you.
And I definitely need, what I'm afraid is that this laptop will die on me. So I better do that when I come back to Orlando next week.
All righty. Well, I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording if you're ready.
I think we're done.
All right. Well, thank you all very much for your time and your attention this afternoon. We'll send you the documents, the handouts, and the draft MOU.
Yeah.
We look forward to getting together with you again soon to talk about it.
I just saw a heart sign, so it looks like people are not too unhappy.
They're for you, Talat.
That's for me, for Valentine, for a late Valentine. Yeah, that's good. Good to
All right, take care, everybody. I'm going to stop.
Thank you.